What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Welcome to Invention, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Invention. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and it's the end of the year. We're sort of wrapping up in the winter season here. This is going to be the end of the first year of Invention as a podcast. And we're coming at you with some year-end wrap-up listener mail. I think we're probably going to do two episodes worth of listener mail, because we haven't heard from you since August or so. It's been a while on this.
Oh, yeah.
So we figured this would be a great way to close out the year, to share some messages from fans of the show like you.
All right. So we're going to summon what's our mailbot in the show name?
Oh, we've forgotten the name. It's Malos.
Oh, yes. Malos. Yes.
Modeled after Talos, the bronze automaton. Mm-hmm. And this is the mailbot Malos. Say hello, Malos.
Okay. Now I remember him. My bad. All right. So we have some listener mail. Let's dive right into it. These are, again, going to refer to various episodes of the show, some recent, some not so recent, but it's all good stuff.
Yeah. It's going a ways back. And this one comes from the series we did in October about coffins and caskets, all the different kinds of inventions in that world, like to prevent your body from being removed from a coffin or casket when you wanted to stay in there, to help get your body out of a coffin or casket when you wanted to get out. So this one comes from our listener, Catherine. Catherine says, "Hey guys, first I want to tell you how much I'm enjoying your podcast. I am a former librarian turned stay-at-home mom with two kiddos, a 2-year-old and a 6-month-old. I really enjoy listening while doing stuff around the house, and I have a story for you that's too funny not to share. I was listening to your first episode on caskets earlier this week. Since y'all are family-friendly, I was letting it play where my 2-year-old EJ could hear. I didn't really think she was paying attention, but boy was I wrong. In the episode, you talked about Victorian safety caskets and Edgar Allan Poe. Well, I happen to have an Edgar Allan Poe finger puppet on my desk in our office. The day after listening to Caskets Part 1, I found Poe's jacket lying in the middle of the office floor. So I called EJ into the room and asked her where Edgar Allan Poe was. She knows who he is because I've let her play with the puppet a few times. She immediately said, "Oh!" and runs over to my husband's desk and retrieves his glasses case. He's dead! She then proceeds to open the glasses case, revealing interred and jacketless Edgar Allan Poe. Then she says, "But not really." Yes, my 2-year-old had buried Edgar Allan Poe in my husband's glasses case alive. Needless to say, my mind was blown. I didn't know whether to laugh or not. I had no idea she was paying such close attention to the episode. Anyway, I thought y'all would enjoy knowing that you have a very young and attentive listener. Keep up the good work, Catherine.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Putting horrors in a child's head that early is a real privilege.
Well, no. Well, yes and no. But I do find it amusing because, yeah, young kids, they are very interested in concepts of death and so forth, even if they certainly don't have the ability to fully understand these lofty concepts, I mean, the understanding of which eludes adults a lot of the time. But yeah, I don't know how many times I've, you know, my son has been playing with stuffed animals and there's one that has dead or has died, you know, or must, or, you know, and so forth. So, yeah, I think this is a wonderful story. And also it's neat that they applied the, you know, the concepts of live burial to the scenario.
Yeah.
I'm just glad that they weren't listening into the guillotine episode. It could have right. really gone sideways on you.
Are we family friendly? I guess we are. We're not overtly or intentionally not family friendly, but we cover some mature stuff.
We don't cuss.
That's true.
Per se, you know? All right, here's another one. This comes to us from Josh, and it concerns caskets as well. Hey, guys, I'm writing this after listening to the second part of The Casket and thought you might find this interesting or at least entertaining. My wife and I are members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and we believe in a literal and physical resurrection. I found your discussion of the idea that your body needs to stay intact for resurrection very interesting, mostly because I am an organ donor. I figure that organs taken from my body will somehow be returned when the time comes. I also figure if people who choose cremation can get resurrected, how hard could it be to just get a heart or liver back? I figure someone else should use them while I can't anyway. My wife, on the other hand, is of a different opinion. She doesn't like the idea of her organs flying through the air on their way back to her body. I thought you may like that personal take on one of the aspects discussed on the episode. I listen to a lot of podcasts, but yours are easily my favorites. Best wishes, Josh.
Oh, thanks, Josh. Well, I wonder how does this belief square with, like, fears about how your body is interred? Like, do you have a fear of grave robbing? I guess grave robbing doesn't happen a lot these days, as far as I know.
Ooh, I don't know, Joe. Check out the headlines. There's some stories out there.
Yeah.
There are new versions of grave robbing that are allegedly going on as well.
Oh, yeah?
But
what, in like New Orleans with above ground burials and crypts and stuff?
No, there was a news story. Gosh, I don't remember which city this was out of. But the idea – no, it was out of Arizona.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, perhaps out of Phoenix. I don't recall. But basically the idea that some organ donation places were not operating like on the level.
Oh, no.
And, you know, had like, you know, bags of organs sitting around, that sort of thing.
Don't let that discourage you from donating more.
Absolutely.
Being an organ donor is great.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm just saying that you may not be concerned about your body being stolen these days, but you can find room, you know, to like my main reaction to seeing that story on the news was that, okay, someone's going to use this as an excuse not to donate their body to science or become an organ donor, which mm-hmm. I think is absolutely the wrong move. Certainly, you know, look into where your body's going, you know, be an informed donor you know, to the extent to which that is possible. But, you know, on the other hand, I think the argument that you're not going to use your organs once you're dead is totally solid. Let somebody else use them. And then I do love the way Josh factors this into his belief system, you know, that he doesn't let belief in a physical resurrection keep him from doing something that you know, can help people out and can improve the quality of life and save lives for other individuals.
Sure. All right, should we move on to emails about our episode on ketchup? We got a ton of feedback about ketchup. I don't know how covered in ketchup we want to get here, but
it's the logical place to go after organ donation.
I guess so. Should we look at this first one from Christian? This is responding to our comments about currywurst and the role of ketchup in German food. I think I said that I believed currywurst was like a type of like cut up sausage that was popular German fast food that was in some kind of curry ketchup mixture. Christian responds, "Hi, I'm quite late, but my podcatcher is backed up a little bit, so I write to you now about your episode on ketchup. First, great episode. Second, you weren't slandering German cuisine at all." Now that makes me wonder exactly what it was I said. currywurst is a German bratwurst drowned in a secret sauce, which is mostly ketchup and curry powder, and is widely available as a, quote, traditional German fast food invented in the 50s and 60s. Historically, it served as a whole wurst in Berlin and cut with scissors in my home region in the Ruhr. That is a squick I did not know that I had. That is like cutting sausage with a knife, that's normal. But like the scissors, that got into my brain and did horrible things.
I don't know. You got to cut a sausage with something.
I don't know. Why do the scissors feel so much worse?
I don't know. I mean, well, I guess it comes back to the idea that a sausage is phallic in form.
I'm not sure it does, actually, because I found I was also getting grossed out by the idea of just generally cutting meat with scissors. It gave me the creeps.
I mean, we have kitchen shears, right?
Yeah.
Those are sometimes used to take apart, say, a chicken carcass, right?
I guess they sometimes are.
I use it to take apart vegetables sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, why? That's not – are you wigged out by the possibility of using kitchen shears on, say – I don't know, celery?
I don't know, maybe a little bit, more so on the meat. I don't know, something's going wrong there. Anyway, Christian continues, it was a long time in the top three most served fast food in Germany until Döner Kebab pushed it out down to the fourth spot. The second most sold ketchup in Germany after regular ketchup is curry ketchup, with Hela, the leading brand, with a more marked share than the American juggernaut Heinz. So eating ketchup in Germany often comes with curry powder. And while I keep a bottle of ketchup around my kitchen, I really can't stand curry in my ketchup since I started cooking meals and exploring flavor for myself. Keep up the great podcasting. I hope I can catch up with your podcast soon. With spiced greetings, Christian.
Huh. Well, this is great. Now I really want to try some German ketchup. I feel like a lot of German cuisine is kind of unavailable to me now because it is traditional German cuisine. Germans,
it's a lot of meat.
Please
correct
me if I'm wrong. But yeah, I tried to go to a German restaurant in New Orleans very recently, and I just looked at the menu and I'm like, okay, there's like nothing I can eat here.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
you could get some good potato salad, or
it has bacon in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
Or
that.
It usually does. I mean, maybe I guess there are probably variations of German potato salad that don't have meat in them. But my understanding is that it usually does. And so, like, the only two things on the menu of an otherwise great-looking German restaurant,
mm-hmm.
the two things that were vegetarian were not particularly German. So what was the point of going, right?
I don't know. I'm sorry, man.
But I am happy to be corrected by anyone out there who has recommendations on German restaurants in the continental United States that can appease my dietary constraints, or likewise just information about what is it like to eat traditional German fare and be a vegetarian.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, I look forward for the recipes coming in.
Yeah.
Robert, do you mind if I jump on with this next one about chup? Because I was already practicing some of these words.
Oh, yes.
A little bit.
Please do. This one looks long.
It's not too long, but it's about words. I'm still going to get some of them wrong, I know. All right. So this was also about the ketchup episode. It's from a listener who did not want us to share her name aloud. So if I name her, I'm just going to call her Chup for ketchup. This message seems to be in response to us talking about how tomatoes used to be known as the apples of love, or love apples, mm-hmm. like in French, and how other fruits and tubers and stuff were once named with some kind of apple plus modifier construction. For example, potatoes in French are pomme de terre, apples of the earth, and so forth. And so this was in response to that. Our listener Chup writes, "Hey guys, you were wondering in the ketchup episode about other weird apples. So being the multilingual linguistics geek, but not a proper linguist that I am, I felt inclined to share my knowledge. First of all, apple, or medieval Latin pomum, didn't only mean apple, but food or crop in general." That's interesting. This is why various settlers called plants they found in other parts of the world some kind of apple. The origins aren't always linguistically clear, since the English, French, Spanish, and Dutch all ventured all over the world and often found similar plants independently in very different places, since they weren't the first people to travel and conquer all over the place and spread crops all over the place. Here are some examples. Pomegranate means seeded apple. The name is of French and medieval Latin origin. Extra fact, the apple that Adam and Eve share in biblical tradition was probably originally thought to be a pomegranate, since that was a fruit well known but still considered a delicacy in the Levant region. Of course, paradise isn't limited in any way, and all fruits can grow there, but this is essentially about stories and culture. I know it's in the original text, it is not specified to be an apple, like the fruit we call an apple. It's just like it's a fruit and we don't necessarily know what fruit it was supposed to be. So there's the debate about what fruit it was in the Garden of Eden.
I was like thinking of it as a banana just because it's more funny that way.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think I've heard somebody propose it was a lemon. I like that.
Oh, the lemons are delicious.
This listener continues, in Greek, then Latin, then German, English, French, etc. translations, the pomegranate became an apple, and so it was depicted in Eurocentric art. Oranges are called Apfelsine or Applesine in German and Dutch, which means Chinese apple. Peaches were originally called Persian apples. They're called Persic in Dutch, and the country is Persier, making it even clearer. Where the fruit was first discovered by Europeans, even though it originated somewhere in Central to East Asia, like oranges. Potatoes are called the Earth apple in Dutch, Aardappel, and in some German-speaking regions, Erdapfel. Pineapples are a little more convoluted. They're called this because they reminded the Spanish explorers of pine cones with overall shape and scales. Wild pineapples are also about the same size as pine cones. Now, in Dutch, they say dennenappel for fir cone, but that's basically the same thing. However, pineapples are called ananas. I guess that's in Dutch. Quinces? Quinces? I've never actually...
I guess I was saying quinces. I don't know if I was saying it correctly.
Okay. Quinces are called Cydonian apples or variants of that. They spread from West Asia through the Mesopotamian Empire to Greece, where they entered European culture, and Cydonia was a city on Crete. Maybe it was also a quince that Adam and Eve supposedly ate. She says, that's all I can think of, but also a few other things. Peppers are some etymologic variant of pepper in most languages, as far as I know, she says. And then she also has some comments about currywurst, as currywurst is usually veal or fine pork sausage, and it's a common street food sold on markets, permanent sausage stands, and carnivals, mainly in Berlin and the Ruhrgebiet. Both regions claim to be the origin. In Germany, we only have McDonald's, Burger King, and some KFC in recent years as fast food chains. Instead, there are these hole-in-the-wall kiosk-style places that sell all kinds of sausages. Curry ketchup can be bought anywhere and is very good with fries. Oh yeah, but you probably know this. Fries originated in Belgium, and Belgians are very proud of them. Always happy about the foodie episodes. Thanks for the hard work, detailed research, and quality entertainment. Have a great week.
I do want to come in real quick since we're talking more about German food.
Uh-huh.
I do not mean to imply that I think Germany is a monolith and that everyone in Germany
just eats
sausages and wears lederhosen or whatever. Obviously, there are multiple different cultures are represented in Germany, and not everyone is eating traditional German cuisine, especially as it is recognized generally by American audiences that are going to German restaurants. But so my question is more specifically, what would modern day me seek out to eat in order to scratch the same itch that meat heavy German American restaurants offered when I was a kid?
Well, you know what? I would say actually, perhaps my favorite thing in German cuisine is not a meat. It is completely vegetarian. It's their pickles. I love sauerkraut.
Oh, yeah.
Sauerkraut is wonderful.
Well, this is true. I do still eat sauerkraut, and I do frequently have sauerkraut on like veggie dogs and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, maybe I'm already practicing the answer, but I want more answers than that.
All right. You've got your assignment, folks. Write in with vegetarian German food for Robert. I should just say, by the way, that we heard from a lot of like European listeners about the ketchup episode. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's a coincidence, but like multiple listeners from like Austria and Germany about ketchup. I don't know what's going on there.
That's great. I want more of it. All right, here's another one. This one comes to us from David, and here he goes. Hello, guys. Another great episode. As an Australian listener, I just wanted to share some differences in the way we refer to the food items and sauces mentioned. First of all, Australians, up until fairly recently, did not have a product in the supermarket that was called ketchup. What you would call ketchup, we simply called tomato sauce.
Oh, ho, ho.
For an Australian, ketchup is thought of as a thicker sauce. I believe this may be because Heinz sells both a thinner tomato sauce and a thicker ketchup. It is also quite interesting that Heinz is so associated with the red sauce in the U.S. In Australia, beans means Heinz, quote unquote, is a big advertising campaign.
Always makes me think of that album by The Who. It's got the Heinz baked beans on it.
David continues, they are the baked beans company to most of us, and this ketchup thing is only probably a thing in the last 5 to 10 years, maybe a little longer. I would imagine that the numbers you used for worldwide sales includes our tomato sauce as ketchup. On our condiment and sauce profile, we are not big on the mustard. On any family table or at restaurants, you are more likely to see tomato sauce and barbecue sauce as the two main sauces.
Strange.
We have hot dogs with the Frankfurt, but Australians are more likely to have a sausage sandwich that has a clear skinned sausage that is cooked on the barbecue in a single piece of white bread with or without cooked onions, and the sauces are either tomato or barbecue.
Hmm. Barbecue sauce everywhere.
Yeah. And it sounds like no buns for – it's bread instead of bun, right?
Yeah, like the white bread with the grilled items. I mean, that's sort of a thing in American Southern barbecue tradition too.
Yeah. David continues, Australians call French fries chips. It is a strange thing that we have two products that are referred to as chips. They are the fried potato and the thinly cut cold product that you call chips and the English call crisps. The way we differentiate is to say hot chips, but that is only when we think it will cause confusion. So that's interesting. They kind of took chips. It's like the American chips and the British chips, and they just use both.
Yeah, it's very economical. Hot chips.
David finishes up here and says, anyway, just thought that I would share this because throughout the episode, I was continually having to translate in my own mind as you were using these terms.
I don't know why. I am always very interested to hear what other people call food items and how they talk about them in different cultures.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a wonderful way to share and share alike with another culture. It's like talking about, hey, what does a chicken say in your language? Mm-hmm. What do you call this food item that you inevitably have over there as well? And if you don't have it, well, then that's something we can relate about as well. What do you have instead? The kitchen table is the dining table in general. That's the place where peace is made between otherwise differing people, right?
All right, it's time to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you, something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Okay, so we are back. Next, we're moving on to responses we got to our series about the invention of air conditioning. I would say this one got probably the most feedback of any episode we've done. There was a huge amount of email about air conditioning. There is no way we'll have a chance to read it all. We can do our best to give a decent sampling here. So first I wanted to start off with a message from Adam. This one was a correction about something we said in the air conditioning episode. So we were pointing out that a regular fan does not actually cool the air in a room. In fact, a fan might slightly increase the temperature of the air in the room. And instead, a fan, we were saying, cools the body by causing air to move rapidly over your skin, which cools you by speeding up the evaporation of water from your skin. And that, of course, is true, but here's Adam giving a fuller and clearer picture on the issue. So Adam says, "Hey, Robert and Joe, I've written into Stuff to Blow Your Mind a few times recently, but this is my first time writing into Invention. I'm a mechanical engineering student who did very well in my heat transfer class, and I spotted an incorrect statement in your air conditioning episode. Knowing how much you love corrections, I thought I would provide this one. Hopefully it is not too dry. While evaporative cooling is certainly a factor in fan cooling, it's only part of the effect. The rest is the result of different modes of heat transfer. To start, heat is transferred from the skin to the air through conduction. In non-moving air, the air that has just been heated forms a graduated layer around the body, which insulates you and makes you feel warmer. This air becomes buoyant and rises in accordance with the chimney effect. The warm air is thus gradually replaced with cool air, and the cycle continues. This is known as natural convection. In moving air, the warm layer of air around your skin is wicked away by the flow of air around you, reducing the size and effectiveness of the insulating hot air boundary. This is known as forced convection. The heat transfer coefficient, and therefore the heat transfer rate, of forced convection is greater than that of natural convection, which in this case means that moving air will draw more heat away and cool you better, regardless of whether or not you're sweating. The reason why the temperature reading of Joe's thermometer did not change when air was blown on it before being wrapped in a wet towel is because the thermometer was already the same temperature as the air, and therefore there was no heat transfer with the air regardless of flow speed. However, for warm-blooded creatures like us, we are almost always experiencing heat transfer. Some interesting results of this concept are: cold-blooded animals are not effectively cooled by fans unless they have recently been basking. A side note, radiation is the third form of heat transfer, along with conduction and convection. There's a high theoretical temperature where moving air will actually heat you up faster than stagnant air. And of course, you can imagine that by just stepping into a convection oven, right? Is blowing air on you, but it's certainly not cooling you off.
Right. Also, don't step into a convection oven.
Adam continues, although due to the evaporative effects of sweat that Joe talked about, this temperature is well above your body temperature. So you can get a fan blowing on you even if the air is above 98 degrees, and it will still cool you off because of the sweat evaporation. But whatever this theoretical temperature is where the blowing of a fan would actually heat you up instead of cool you down, Adam calls this the anti-fan temperature. Also, Adam says, running in the same direction and speed as the wind is an incredibly strange and uncomfortable feeling. I wonder if I've done that before.
I've certainly experienced this on a boat before,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, you're going against the wind on, say, like a hot day. And if you're going against the wind, yeah, it's just heightened wind, you know, and heightened air moving past you, and it's very cooling and liberating. And then when you have to go back the other way, you might find yourself in a more like heated environment. You're like, well, what am I doing now? I'm actually like really breaking a sweat here.
Yeah. I hope that this mini heat transfer lesson was interesting. I wasn't able to continue listening until I cleared this small error up. Keep up the great, almost entirely factual podcasting. Best regards, Adam. Well, thank you, Adam.
That's our thing. Almost entirely factual podcasting. But no, obviously we want to be corrected if we get anything off on the show.
Yeah. So the main gist there, that there is something a fan does to help cool you apart from just helping evaporate sweat, and it's just moving more air over your skin, which helps you conduct heat into the air faster.
All right. Here's another air conditioning one, and this one's really good. I'm glad we put this one on the list here. This one comes to us from Hwarya. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. They write in and say, "Hi, Robert and Joe. I'm a big fan of Invention and Stuff to Blow Your Mind. I started listening to both of them when Invention started, but I've liked them so much that I've gone back and listened to a few years' worth of Stuff to Blow Your Mind episodes. I decided to write in after listening to the Air Conditioning Part 1 episode. I grew up in India, spending a lot of summers in Kerala, which is a hot and humid state, and have been living in Austin, Texas for the last 4 years. Most of my family in India do not have air conditioning, although they probably could now. So the episode made me reflect on living with versus without air conditioning. You mentioned sleeping on roofs, but I don't think you mentioned the more obvious solution, sleep on the floor or use thinner mattresses.
Hmm.
Sleeping on the floor is a lot easier than in a bed in hot weather because the floor will be cooler. It gets better if you wet the floor and let it dry a couple of hours before sleeping, or shower just before bed. Also, a cotton mattress, which you can't sink into as much, and cotton sheets, which are more breathable, are much better for the heat compared to the kind of bedding which is more common here in the U.S. I've resorted to all of these strategies, and if all else fails, sleeping in damp clothes when I had a tiny dorm room in undergrad in a hot, humid place with no AC. Although I have become somewhat spoiled after coming to the U.S., I still find that I am more comfortable with a higher temperature and a table fan pointed at my face than a low AC temperature for sleeping. One thing I haven't been able to understand is the extent to which sweat bothers people here. For me, it's been a normal part of life, and I actually find it harder to handle dry heat than some level of humidity. I also find that my body just feels better due to cooling from evaporation, while an unnecessarily cold AC just makes me feel a little ill. One last thing. Initially, when you mentioned step ponds and wells, I was a little surprised because I hadn't heard of the term, and I was wondering how come I did not know about this. From the description, I realized that I did know about them, but just hadn't appreciated that there was anything special about them. Thank you for helping me see them in a new light. They're fairly common in temples in Kerala, but as these are usually not very welcoming of tourists, I can see why they haven't been seen as much. It's also easy to imagine how the need for space in cities may result in these being filled or taken over. It's definitely happened with lakes in Bangalore. Thanks again for awesome podcast, Aishwarya.
What a great message.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for sharing this. This reminds me, real quick, we'll come back to this, but another listener sent in some pictures that he took, a listener named Alan, just of some step wells in India. And I just wanted to emphasize again how weirdly beautiful and counterintuitive they look. They look so much like optical illusions to me. The steps zigzagging down the walls really somehow seem to defy the normal rules of perspective, and I want to understand what's going on with that.
Yeah, indeed. These pictures that were sent in were pretty amazing, and there have been some wonderful photographs that have been made over the years of them. I think we discussed in the show how they are, you know, for a while they were kind of forgotten to a certain extent,
mm-hmm.
and there's been a sort of a renaissance in reevaluating them, reappreciating them, and sharing images of them with the world, which is wonderful because, like you say, there's nothing else quite like them.
Yeah.
You know, the best way I can think of them is it's like an inverted ziggurat.
Yeah. But also, Aishwarya, I really appreciate you sharing all these sort of like hacks for temperature at night, like wetting the floor so
yeah.
that like the evaporative heat of the water evaporating off the floor actually cools the floor right before bed. And I wonder how hard you have to manage like the timing of that and stuff, because I assume you wouldn't want to like lie down while it's still wet. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know. This was really interesting. Also, the fact that you've had perspective on it both ways now. Yeah. So thanks so much. All right. Also about air conditioning, our listener Tom says, "Hey, guys, I was listening to the podcast and you mentioned movie theaters offering AC. You said if you were in this position, you would look for the longest movie. However, in the old days when I was a kid, even after the 30s, movies didn't charge you to watch a movie. They charged an admission. Movies always had short reels and often were double features. Either way, you routinely walked into a movie at any time, sat through the end, and then watched the beginning until you got to the place you already saw. In fact, you'd frequently see people leave saying, 'This is where we came in.' Many times we would sit and rewatch the movie." I guess just take advantage of the air conditioning, right?
Is that the line from the Pink Floyd song that you and I were talking about?
Wait, what are you talking about?
"This is where we came in"?
Oh, yeah. What's the deal with that?
With the wall, right?
The wall supposedly like loops somehow.
Yeah. So what a weird coincidence. We were speaking about that off mic earlier, totally unrelated to listener mail.
It must mean something.
Yeah. All right. Here's another one. This one comes to us from David. "First of all, love the podcast, but I'm somewhat new to the stuff to blow your mind sphere, but I've been with invention from its inception. I love seeing the evolution of technologies and how they shaped the world we know today. I was looking forward to this episode," and he's talking about the air conditioning episode, because I knew you'd be mentioning my hometown of Minneapolis. I also strongly suspected that you'd be surprised to learn that we hosted the site of the first residential air conditioning installation, which indeed we did express surprise at that."
Yes.
"Let me tell you, Minneapolis can get hot in the summer. We have roughly 2 to 3 months out of the year that I'd call legitimately hot. This doesn't happen too often, but it's not unheard of for us to even see a couple of 110-plus Fahrenheit days per year.
What?
What many people forget is that we're positioned fairly centrally on the continent, with Lake Superior and Michigan the only large bodies of water to regulate temperature swings that are even close. So we experience very cold days for sure, but pretty dang hot ones too. Keep up the great work, David. I'll admit that my visions of Minneapolis were largely based on, first of all, jokes from people who had lived there about the cold, and having ventured there only once during the winter for like 24 hours, and having to like get out on, you know, and walking around and traveling from one point to another. And so on some level, I just imagine that Minneapolis is just always really cold, except for maybe like a month or two in the summer where they experience something called summer, but surely not as hot as something that we would have down here.
What's the TV show that's set there? Is it Mary Tyler Moore or something?
Maybe so.
Yeah, it always looks cold.
It's kind of the reverse of the effect you see with television shows shot in Toronto. Specifically, I'm thinking of Kim's Convenience, which is a wonderful Canadian show. And then I think Working Moms is also set there and filmed there.
Okay.
But I get the impression they only film the show during the summer or in the, you know, warmer months. And so if you were just watching those two shows, you would think, wow, Toronto looks amazing. It's just summer all the time. They have no winters there, nor at least nobody on the show talks about it. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm going to, you know, book my trip for November and see what happens. But likewise, I think that the talking points for Minneapolis among, you know, people abroad tend to be about the cold.
Yeah, I think you're right on the money there. Okay, quick message from our listener, Colin. Colin is referring again to the thing I talked about in the episode where, you know, I held up a thermometer in front of a desk fan and the temperature didn't change. But then when I wrapped it in a wet towel, the temperature went way down, and that was because of the evaporative cooling. So Colin says, hello, I just finished part one of air conditioning and wanted to draw your attention that Joe was obliquely describing a sling psychrometer when he spoke of using a wet cloth thermometer and desk fan to prove the cooling properties of evaporation. A sling psychrometer is a rudimentary meteorological device composed of two bulb thermometers connected by a string. The bulb of one thermometer is wrapped in a wet cloth and the other is not. The thermometers are then swung around circularly for several seconds, and then the temperature of each is recorded. The difference in temperature reading can then be entered into a table which will provide you with the relative humidity. The more arid the ambient air is, the greater the temperature discrepancy will be. Anyway, it's a term from fourth grade earth sciences that has always stuck with me because it's fun to say. Love the show. Cheers, Colin.
All right. On that note, we're going to take one more break, but we'll be right back with more listener mail.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years, and not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal, and may lose value.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the wind down tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. on demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
All right, we're back. So we're going to read some more air conditioning listener mail. This one comes to us from an individual named Christian. I guess a different Christian. I'm not sure.
A different one.
We don't want to imply that they're like just two listeners. And they just we just pretend
sometimes
they're
it happens. We just get multiple listeners of the same.
Yeah,
name.
Yeah, yeah. And certainly we love hearing from repeat listener mail offenders as well. But Christian writes in and says, "Hey guys, I enjoyed the air conditioning podcast. As an architect, there are any number of rants about poorly designed buildings I could break off into. But I thought it might be more beneficial to introduce something critical to heating, ventilation, air conditioning design. This tool is the psychrometric chart with the comfort zone for humans highlighted."
Oh, yeah. So this would connect to what we were just talking about, a psychrometer detecting like relative humidity levels.
Yeah. "The comfort zone illustrates that 75 degrees in Atlanta with 90% humidity feels hot, yet 80 degrees in Southern California with 50% humidity does not. The big takeaway, humidity control can be more important than temperature in our comfort. In the South, our air conditioners remove moisture from the air while cooling it. When our buildings have dehumidification systems, which operates separately from the air conditioning systems, we can be more comfortable over a wider range of temperatures, thus saving energy. Typically, houses aren't constructed that way, but probably should be, especially in the hot, muggy South."
That's really interesting. I'd never thought of that before, that like you could use less energy achieving a comfort zone if you take into account temperature and humidity separately instead of just running an AC to do both all the time.
Yeah, so you could have one device stuck in one window and then another one in the other window. Then you have to have two devices, which, you know, this is – I do think this gets to the heart of why you don't see this utilized in a home environment. All right, what else do we have, Joe?
All right, this next message came in response to our episode on the invention of the hypodermic needle. This comes from Dan. Dan says, "Hi, Robert and Joe. I was listening to your most recent listener mail episode and was surprised that the letters you received about the hypodermic needle lacked any input from type 1 diabetics. I myself have been managing type 1 diabetes since I was diagnosed at age 3 almost 30 years ago. Before switching to insulin pump therapy in the mid-2000s, I spent about 15 years getting between 5 and 7 injections of insulin each and every day. Additionally, every 3 months, having blood drawn to check long-term markers of possible hyperglycemia-related damage. As you might suspect, this served as exposure therapy to the extreme for myself and any other diabetics in the pre-insulin pump era. As a child, I had absolutely no trepidation with needles, injections, or IVs. My story takes an unexpected turn, however, when I was in college and was diagnosed with cancer at age 20. I'm happy to say that I've been cancer-free and relatively healthy for 10 years now, but the traumatic experience of the diagnosis and subsequent treatment manifested in a surprising manner. During my treatment, I had to regularly undergo CT scans to monitor my disease, which involved an intravenous injection of contrast dye. This seemed like no big deal at the time, as I was well accustomed to needles and blood draws, but during one of my CT scan sessions, I became extremely dizzy and nearly fainted during the insertion of the IV line. Ever since that experience, I've been very uneasy around needles and often feel lightheaded during blood draws, despite my exposure therapy consisting of tens of thousands of injections during my lifetime. I can only hypothesize that the trauma of my cancer diagnosis and treatment created an anxious association with needles, but I thought this would be an interesting story of exposure therapy early in life that was surprisingly counteracted by later events. Thanks again for putting together such consistently intelligent and insightful episodes of Invention and Stuff to Blow Your Mind. I am a cell biologist working in cancer research, and having well-researched and stimulating podcasts to listen to both helps me get through some of the mundane and repetitive tasks required in my scientific research and continually expands my perspective. Best, Dan."
Very interesting. Thanks for sharing that with us, Dan.
Yeah, totally. And best of luck in your research. All right, here's one message in response to the episode we did about the Turnspit dog. This comes from someone who identified themselves as Gamer Checks. We don't choose their names.
I think that's their God-given name.
Okay, Gamer Checks. Gamer Checks says, love the show. I was listening to your episode on the Turnspit dog, and you talked about the dog being domesticated 12,000 years ago and brought up how we domesticated the cat later on. This is actually not the case. Cats are the only close companion who domesticated themselves. Gotta love the stubborn little chonks. Anyway, in the future, I'd love to see a themed episode on the invention of domestication itself. Thanks, Gamer Checks.
Yes, this is a good point, and one that I think we have discussed on past episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, our other podcast. Mm-hmm. But yes, there is the argument that the cat essentially brokered its own domestication. The cat wanders up and is like, "Hey, I see you got a problem with some rats there. Looks like you got some extra food around. A creature like me could really earn its keep around here." Uh-huh. And we said, "Oh, sure, let's do that." And what do you want in return? The cat's like, "I just want enough to wet my beak." And then the cat wants to live inside your house and on you and so forth. And certainly anyone who has lived with a cat knows that the cat seems to be there on its own terms for the most part.
Carrying out nightly missions for the neighborhood witch.
Yes. but I could see us doing an episode on domestication in the future. I mean, it is a human technology, though it also is it's not entirely a human technology. There are examples in the natural world of creatures that have domesticated something, and that would be fun to talk about as well.
Sure, yeah, like insect agriculture.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and then also some of the stories of domestication are just so impressive. Really, I mean, there are specific examples that really should be their own episode, like silk.
Yeah. Oh, I've thought about doing this before. Yeah.
Well, heck, let's do silk in the new year.
Okay, so I think due to time constraints, we're going to have to call it there for the first of our year-end wrap-up episodes of Invention Listener Mail, but we'll be back with more next time.
That's right. We're going to close out the year with another episode of Invention Listener Mail, and then we'll be back with new episodes of Invention in the new year. But really, the year's almost over. Stop learning. Really, you don't need to keep going.
Just... Hey, there's a lot to learn from these messages.
There is, and a lot for us to learn specifically. And we do love hearing from everyone. We don't have time to respond to everyone, and we don't have time to read every listener mail that we receive on the show. But do know that we are reading, and so we just invite you to continue to send in your questions, tidbits from your life, from your environment. We love to hear all of it. In the meantime, if you want more episodes of Invention, it's pretty easy to find us. We're on all those podcast websites. Wherever you get a podcast, wherever you even hear a whisper of podcasts, we are there. You can go to inventionpod.com, and that'll redirect you to a page that has our podcast. Wherever you go, though, just make sure you subscribe, that you rate, that you review. These are the sacred rights that allow us to continue.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, to perhaps get featured on a future listener mail episode, you can email us at contact@inventionpod.com.
Invention is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer, and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great-looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection, and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful fingersticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch, so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.